John Deary, sir, first of all, you're very welcome to the program, and I, you know, we were reflecting indeed on the many, many years, about half, we could say, you know, for about 25 of my 50 years on radio. We had a good thing going, we had a lot of fun, but we also, John Deary, took on a lot of issues that, you know, that in hindsight were very, we could say, bold in hindsight.
Well, you know, Adrian, I've said it many times, and that is that I miss very much having our 2 hours together on Saturdays, and it was about 25 years or so that we were together. And the thing that always struck me is that that microphone of yours, which then allowed ears and ideas of Irish families that were listening to hear every point of view on many of these issues, on virtually all of them, and many of them are controversial. Many of them had more than one point of view. And I always loved the idea that that was a platform to be able to have those concepts discussed, analyzed, thought about, and it was very, very great learning experience for me, I can assure you. So yeah, I look back on those years with great, great appreciation and fondness.
Yeah. Well, it was a great teaching experience for me, and you brought a lot to the program. We're not going to turn this into a backslapping conversation because we don't have to. All I know is that during all of that time, we were able to take very serious topics, and then we had a lot of fun. We had, you know, hundreds of entertainers and and guests, and everything was live. That was it. In particular, though, before we get into the topic of which we're going to delve into on the U.S. presidential forum, the St. Patrick's Day programs, when we go back, there were times that we had 10 hours, and even then it would be, you know, the programs would be extended. It was absolutely amazing, and of course we got, you know, Clancy Brothers, the you know, the Irish tenors, so many groups who would be in, and of course the chieftains who would be in New York, and they had a spot, and some great, great guests, politicians galore. My God,
governors and mayors and congressmen and senators, and I think they all enjoyed it very much and enjoyed the reception that was going on,
right?
You know, outside in the conference room there, and the music and the singing. I'll tell you, I from 1 year to the next, I so enjoyed our St. Patrick's Days, and again, the entertainment was just fantastic.
Yeah.
And listen, not for doing the backslapping, but I don't think anything was more of a highlight that generally near the end of the show, when you stepped away from the microphone, got over there at the piano, and belted away on, you know, on the song that really you made famous. And so that, your own singing and entertainment, and if I could remember the name of the song, it would even be better.
The unicorn.
Oh, my God. Yes. Hello.
Well, you know, I have to, John, I had to, you know, pick a song to rival, you know, your version of Galway Bay. And your version of Galway Bay actually was, it was unique in that you paid little attention, you know, to singing the verses in order. And you had all of these people following you, you know. And, you know,
well,
people like Kieran Sheehan, who would be there with, you know, wide open eyes, wondering, You know, should he just back away from this altogether and, and leave it to them? Because this is doing nothing for his image. Nothing.
Well, yeah, it's so true, but that's in line with fun and so many good laughs that we had. And I hope the audience enjoyed it half as much as we did, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Great fun.
John Deary, Grandpa, Granddaddy, Papa. What? First of all, you're a granddad. Congratulations. And
thank you.
Do you have now one or two? We know that.
Well, actually, I think some of the listeners over the years may recall we have two boys, John Patrick and Michael Brendan, and both of them were married last year in 2018, and John and his wife Lee on October 31st had an almost 10-pound son whose name is Luke, and he's now roughly a little more than a month old. So that got us to be our grandparents for the first time. And interestingly, our son Michael and his wife Clarissa, yesterday was her due date. She is not delivered yet, but it's imminent any one of these days. And they're going to have a daughter. So it'll make us grandparents within a matter of about 5 weeks twice. So
wow.
To say it's very exciting, it'd be the least.
Yeah. Okay. Well, congratulations to you, Granddad. Have you any preference at all? Have you and your, Kitty, the new grandma, have you decided, John, what you would like to be called? Because I can tell you, as a grandfather myself, any opinions that you have are worth the salt. But anyway,
truth of the matter is, I really haven't given it much thought, nor have I needed to.
Yeah.
But I guess I will over the next several months.
Yeah.
Until I guess roughly in a year they start doing the naming.
Yeah.
Huh?
And just in case you think that parents are in control of babies, wrong. You know.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
But what do they call you, by the way? Before we get off that topic, what are you known as?
Granddad.
Okay, that's good.
That, and as a matter of fact, of the choices, you know, that to me is number one. But anyway, you're hinting now with the Deary's as to, you know, that this is actually an issue. And like I say, time will tell. But congratulations to...
Yes,
obviously, the parents and to Kitty Deary and John Deary, now grandparents. Yep. John, I think if we take a look at the 2020 as we enter in the 2020 election, we had Kevin O'Connor on there from Ireland talking about people are so fed up of, the issue of Brexit and how it will affect Northern Ireland. And the people in the United Kingdom are just saying, you know, let's turn off this because we're totally disgusted with the whole bloody thing. And let's take some time out. You know, the presidential election and all of the, overexposure through cable television and every other thing about all the, the nitpicking and worse in the, taking place in Washington. Enough already, but we can't lose, sight of the fact that as the clock is ticking, you know, a year from now, there will be a president and it'll be an election. What, if you wouldn't mind, John Deary, bring us back to 1984, when you came up with an idea of having a presidential forum so that candidates for for the presidency could tell us what and how they feel about Ireland, Northern Ireland.
Well, you know, one of the great motivating factors, and I do recall it well, is that I had a feeling in the 70s and going into the early and mid 80s that many public officials, including those at the national level, would have a tendency to wear a green tie on St. Patrick's Day or have a green beer or talk about somebody whose aunt was a nun and think that that took care of their connection to the Irish-American constituency. And I had a strong feeling that it was our obligation as an Irish-American leaders and community to be able to identify what the topics were that we wanted candidates to respond to, and hence, I don't like to use the word necessarily force candidates to think about these issues, but essentially to have their campaigns and themselves at least give consideration. And so that's what in 1984, the first success that we had was having Vice President, at that time he had been out of office, but a former Vice President, Walter Mondale, was the first of the candidates. And then in each of the succeeding 4 years, we would have the presidential forum, Al Gore, Jesse Jackson, Mike Dukakis, and then eventually our major success was in 1992. I remember it so well, and I know that you were there, Adrian. Mm-hmm. A fellow named Clinton from Arkansas spoke extremely well at the presidential forum, and he did two very important things. He committed himself to the appointment of an American special peace envoy to be a catalyst for peace in Northern Ireland, and also that he would grant a visa for Gerry Adams to travel to the U.S. And hence, when he then became president, he followed up on both of those commitments, which were for the first time given at the presidential forum in 92. So that whole notion manifested itself most effectively in that particular year. In 2008, we had a success in the sense that Hillary Clinton participated in a New York City event, and it was for the first time out of New York City in Scranton, Pennsylvania, the first Republican to attend and speak at the forum with Senator John McCain. So we now find ourselves, as we look forward, not many in 2020 of the candidates that we have us on both sides have had much of a commitment to or involvement with, frankly, Irish-American issues. And so I think it's particularly important that we hear from the candidates and do what our original intent was, namely to force their campaigns and the individual candidates to think about the priority of issues that we feel are now on the agenda for the Irish community. And that's what brings us to the announcement that with the other two co-chairmen, I think everyone knows former Congressman Joe Crowley and attorney and very much involved Irish activist Marty Glennon and myself, we're the three co-chairmen of this event, and we're just at the beginning. It was announced last week, and we have an awful lot of work to do between now and on April 26th, which is on a Sunday, 2 days before the presidential forum in New York State, not forum, I'm sorry, but presidential primary in New York State at Fordham University School of Law in Midtown Manhattan. That's where the presidential forum will take place.
John, in the interim, it's not like you're waiting or we're waiting for 2 days before the New York State primary to get responses from each and every one of the candidates, because you're asking them, and you're, you know, with Joe Crowley and Marty Glennon, you're asking them to declare now where they stand. And I'm sure that as those letters and those invitations as they hit the campaigns, many will say, what is this about? Our candidate actually knows nothing about Ireland. Your method, going back to 1984, is we don't expect you to know anything and everything about Ireland, but you better get on board here, because we will expect that you should at least be up to date on the significance of the next president's relationship, you know, with the issues and the continuing peace process in Northern Ireland. Isn't that basically it?
Well, you know, Adrian, one of the things that we had thought about this regularly over these intervening years from the first one, and that is that rather than assuming, and that would be an incorrect assumption, I believe, that these presidential candidates know what the issues are that are of priority interest to the Irish-American community, that it was our responsibility to identify the issues, and it's also, we thought, as part of making the forum effective, is that we told the candidates, as we did, you mentioned, in letters of invitation that were sent out this week, and all of the campaigns have the letter now, but we spell out specifically, these are the six-point Irish-American agenda. Not only is this what the agenda is and the questions you're going to be asked about, but also a background on each of them, each of those topics, so the candidates can begin to understand where the Irish American community is coming from and what we want them to respond to. And then we have a specific question for each one of the six topics. And speaking of that, I'm very pleased that we have what I unquestionably believe is an absolutely outstanding six-member panel, each of whom is going to ask the same question to each of the candidates on each one of those six agenda items. And we're delighted, of course, Adrian, that you are one of the panelists and have agreed to be part of it. Ray O'Hanlon, who is the editor of the Irish Echo, and Debbie McGoldrick, the editor of the Irish Voice, are two others. And the other three members, and it's a very distinguished group of panelists, is Judge McKay, who is the national president of the Ancient Order of Hibernians, and John Samuelson, who is the international president of the Transport Workers Union, and Jim Walsh, who is a 20-year Republican member of Congress from Upper New York State. They are the other three. So it's a very distinguished panel, and I think it just adds to the credibility of the forum.
John, can you give us an overview of, you know, the topics that you will need and that you have decided, you and Joe Crowley and Marty have decided, you know, that you want answers on? This is not a, like, this is not going to be like a trick question kind of session. What generally are, you know, the topics? What are the six that...
The six topics are generally immigration, the continued appointment of an American special peace envoy to Northern Ireland, the role of America in the overall search for peace in Northern Ireland, the post-Brexit decisions and the impact, especially in the North, that whole set of issues, the so-called McGuinness principles, and there's one other that I'm just, for the moment, is just slipping my mind. But those are at least five of the six topics for discussion.
That puts it to them, because that's not going to say, that's easy. And think of how far we have come because of, you know, of going back to 1984, what was then considered by many to be a great idea, but the chances of getting any attention, you know, to a presidential Irish form might have been considered by many to be somewhat cheeky. And it was, and it was perceived that way. And the naysayers would say, I don't know where Deary is going with this one, but if you think any candidate thinks that, you know, they will be questioned with respect to, you know, to Northern Ireland, to the relationship between Northern Ireland, and as we have again now, you know, this goes beyond the shamrock and the green tie. This has to do with issues that we have to be concerned about. It also has to do, John, with the trade deal, trade deals between the United States and Britain. And this gives me an opportunity to bring up the terrific bill that has passed this week, thanks to Congressman Tom Suozzi and to, you know, Congressman Peter King.
Mm-hmm. Yes, as a matter of fact, I just, as we were chatting, I just looked back to see that, yes, that issue about any trade agreement between the U.S. and Great Britain, that was the sixth topic that had slipped my mind a moment ago.
Yeah.
Yes, I was very pleased at the success that Congressman Suozzi had with regard. How do you see that? Because that's a topic I'd be interested in your own thoughts on. How do you see the evolution of a potential agreement between the U.S. and Great Britain, and obviously its impact on Ireland being most significant for our purposes?
John, having spent 30 years in the New York State legislature, talk about, if you will, you know, you mentioned there are the McGuinness principles, but can you go back to, you know, the MacBride principles and, you know, that famous meeting when, you know, my uncle Paul O'Dwyer traveled to Albany to meet this guy Deary, an assemblyman who was going to bring these MacBride principles to the floor, just of the assembly. Just tell us, at that time, was there, even within the New York State Assembly, was there an awareness of many of the issues, and how many of those actually do we find popping up again for the 2020 U.S. presidential forum? Can you bring us to that time?
You know, it's interesting. That is, and we've discussed it on a number of occasions, but it was one of the great days in Albany. I was there actually 20 years. And it was the only time during my tenure that a Nobel Peace Prize winner had addressed the assembly when Sean McBride did so, introduced by, at that time, the speaker was Stanley Fink from Brooklyn.
Right.
And he really made such an impact. And we had a press conference to introduce the McBride principles. And you mentioned, of course, Paul O'Dwyer, and we had an incredible national delegation of Irish American leaders that were all on board there supporting the McBride principles. And what was interesting was that within 1 year, and this is very, very unusual, within one calendar legislative year, the bill was enacted in both houses and signed by then Governor Mario Cuomo. And essentially, it was addressing the issue of the disparity between Catholic and Protestant employment in the North, and essentially saying that in order for the New York State legislature to make commitments through pensions and others to the New York State pension system, that the controller would only make investments in companies that were complying with the McBride principles on fair employment in terms of their employment roster in the North. And that was the McBride principles. And I must say, it was very dramatic. We were the first state to enact that, and Governor Cuomo deserves a tremendous amount of credit for doing that. But the significance and the impact of Sean McBride, Paul O'Dwyer, and other major, major leaders that day was very, you know, was very overwhelming, I must say, and certainly was the singular contributing factor to having it ultimately passed into law and signed by the governor that same year.
Yeah. Well, you know, while you were riding high there in Albany, and, you know, here is Sean McBride and Paul O'Dwyer, you know what a significant role I had in all of that, John. I just want to know, you know, flap back your ears. How do you think those two got there? I had to drive them. And to this day, that is how I feel as a tremendous contributor to all of this. They could still be sitting somewhere, but I was the one who got in the car and drove them up there. And it was Paul O'Dwyer's car, so it was a bit of an old ramshackle anyway. It could have, you know, it was a bit battered.
Well,
could you believe that?
Adrian, I think you just have to say that's one more of the unlimited number of contributions in excess and beyond that you've made to the Irish community. And by the way, it's the first time, even though we've spoken about this particular day being so significant, to my best recollection, it's the first time that I've ever heard, let's just call it, this driving issue raised
right
by you. I'm just wondering, was your humility preventing you from mentioning this in the past? What was it?
Well,
I never
actually
heard that. You were the one who brought them up there. I didn't know that.
I did. And as a matter of fact, one of the reasons that I haven't brought it up, you know, publicly at least anyway, after all those years, is that here I am, and I have a co-host for 25 years, very close friend, and I'm driving the significant, you know, historic figures to Albany. And I thought, this guy, you know, John Deary and, you know, and other buddies like, you know, certain governors and others, surely they wouldn't leave me, you know, sitting out in the car. And but there I was, double parked. So,
oh my God!
Yeah,
Adrian, this is really this is uncalled for, and
yeah,
this is very distressing.
It is, and it was distressing. As a matter of fact, I still haven't gotten over it. You know,
obviously, I hear it. I hear it in your voice.
That's it. You know,
that's a great story, though. I didn't know that. I didn't know it, but it is true. That was an extraordinary day, and certainly among my, as I mentioned, two decades being up there, probably close to the most significant day that I can recall. It was really great.
And
which is a good example of the fact, again, an underpinning of why we want an American special envoy to be involved in the peace process, and that is that we can never underestimate the importance of an American role. I mean, England and Ireland are two great friends of ours, but the truth of the matter, bilateral success on peace has been very limited between those two countries. But the intervention of not only the special envoy, but I would say in particular, Clinton's wise choice of former Senator George Mitchell.
Oh, boy.
As the catalyst and as the first special envoy, his 2 years leading eventually, of course, to the Good Friday Agreement is just so significant in the history here. And the role, again, of American leadership is as important. And one might argue it may have actually even dissipated in the intervening last maybe 15 years. And so the notion of a forum of getting candidates thinking about Irish issues probably as important in 2020 as any time going back over the last four or five elections, frankly.
You know, we take we take for granted that everybody might think that, you know, sending an envoy from America to Northern Ireland to be pretty much, you know, the referee might indeed, and I'm sure a lot of people know, as you know, when that was your primary issue, let's get an envoy, let's get America involved. But there were a lot of, a great number of people, you know, who may have said, why are we sticking our noses? God knows. You know, America has, has had, you know, influence and sometimes without invitation moved into areas and have a very good track record. But there were people who didn't think, you know, that first of all, weren't sure if it was such a great idea, and very few people thought that that was going to become a reality. But here you have this candidate, Clinton, saying, yes, that's what I'm going to do.
That's what I'm going to do, but it's as important and probably more so, that's what he did. You know, not only said he would, but actually did it. And it's, you know, when you speak about opposition to it, the concept of an American in more active involvement in the peace process, certainly England and Great Britain in their lobbying efforts were very active against the McBride principles, which again tied investment into essentially the employment issue. But actually, even for the appointment of an American special envoy, and I'll tell you another group that wasn't very active in support, as a matter of fact, was in opposition. It's called the Irish government. And so we were dealing actually with the notion, and Clinton was, with the notion of an appointment of a special envoy, getting both of the countries essentially speaking, thanks but no thanks. Yeah. And fortunately, he didn't go in that direction.
It's a very, very important, probably the most significant issue for us, again, to have what you started off, you know, with an idea that you can take a full credit for in getting the attention of all of the candidates, and lest people think, well, this is a Democratic, take a look at the candidates, it's all, you know, Democratic. This is very much open to Republicans. This is not a, a centrist or a left wing or a, this is dead serious for those who have already entered and those who, you know, have just entered, like, you know, Mayor Bloomberg has come along. He and everybody, will be taken to the, you know, to the task of tell us what you're doing. And if you need any help, we will definitely advise you.
Time remains to be seen, Adrian, as to how the candidates respond to the invitation and participate. But I will say at this point, I don't want to jinx going forward, but I do think this year and this dynamics of the politics, presidential politics of this year, I suspect that I would like to think all of, but certainly a significant number of the candidates will be appearing and addressing these issues. I'd be very much shocked if that were not to be the case. So time will tell, as they say. But in the beginning of our conversation, you seem negative relative to my singing, but I would say in the last couple of minutes, you've been very gracious with regard to my work on the forum, and believe me, I appreciate the direction you're moving in.
Listen, John, one out of two ain't bad. Let's just face it.
For sure.
But, you know, Sunday, I'll give you another shot at it as we thank you very much. And I have always and will always acknowledge that, you know, through thick and thin, through, you know, an exercise that somebody felt might have been a hobby in radio broadcast. John Deary, you were there then, and you were there now, and at times when we were considering as to whether this, whether we could afford to continue this talk show, this broadcast, you were there. Thank you, and we continue.
Well, Adrian, let me say, as I told many people privately and any opportunity that I've gotten to just really laud, and this is not backslapping, this is really telling it like it is, and that is that for 50 years, your microphone has been open to anyone with any point of view on any of the Irish issues, the amount of education to the Irish community that you have brought over these five decades is just immeasurable. It's just, it's really in the incredible department. So may your voice and health continue that, Saturday mornings become such an important part of what you've done for so long. And as far as I personally am concerned, it was the most wonderful, wonderful learning experience. I came there with some understanding of Irish issues, but through your exposure, came to understand the dimensions pretty well.
Hey. Thanks, Abelian. Good luck with
it
again.
Great to talk with you. Okay. We'll have a lot more to say as the weeks go by here as we move towards the forum, and look forward to talking then.
Thank you. Thank you, my friend.